Welcome to Better Sex, where you get the information and inspiration to create and enjoy your best possible sex life. Join your host, sex therapist Jessa Zimmerman, as she brings you expert guests, helpful tips, knowledge, and strategies to improve your intimate relationships. And now, your host, Jessa Zimmerman.
Hey, it's Jessa and the Better Sex Podcast with a new episode. So glad you are here with me. Really grateful that you take the time and tune in. And I hope every week I have an interesting conversation and I hope it adds value, whether it immediately and directly applies to you or, you know, maybe equips you to help somebody else someday or to have a conversation that, you know, you're prepared for one that you would not have been without it. And today may be one of those shows because we're talking about sex and veterans. So sexual issues and concerns with veterans, whether that is from trauma, PTSD, military sexual trauma, those kinds of experiences that are creating all kinds of ramifications in somebody's regular life when they return, or even injury, you know, coming back wounded, maybe with a devastating injury that affects sexual function. You know, either way, there can be a huge impact on intimacy with a partner or partners. And Asya Brodsky is here to talk about this. She's worked in the VA. She's been heavily involved in these issues and has a lot to say about what are the kinds of things that show up, what are some of the approaches that people can take, what are some of the resources that are available. And again, you listening may not be a veteran, right? This may not apply, but someone in your life may be or will be. And so I think it's really, really valuable. I hope you get a lot out of it. And before we start the show today, it is sponsored by Intimacy with Ease. It's a method to help otherwise happy couples achieve a sex life that is easy and fun for both of them so that you can actually just enjoy your sex life with zero stress. For more information, if you want to watch a brief little training video that's available, all of that, go to intimacywithease.com. So Asya, thank you so much for being on the show with me.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited.
Maybe start with just a little bit of background about your history or why the interest in working with veterans. Where has that come from, this kind of specialty?
Sure. My background, I'm a social worker. I'm also a certified alcohol and drug counselor and a sex certified sex therapist. And I didn't know that I would end up working with veterans, but life kind of has a way of leading us where it does. My grandparents were in World War II, and I have always known that. My grandfather sort of did a lot of social justice work, and I think that's what sort of got me into becoming a social worker. And so I found myself at the VA. I started out there in their homeless program and then served in the mental health clinic for some time. And, you know, sexual issues, like for any other population, are issues that need to be addressed. And so they're common in the veteran population as well. And I do think, in comparison to some places, the VA actually does a great job with having some certified sex therapists across the nation to be able to address some of these issues. I know in Chicago, we have a sexual health nurse who does prescribing. And then for a long time, I was doing therapy for the population. And I've recently transitioned to be the Women Veterans Program Manager and also have my own sex therapy practice on the side.
That's really good to hear that they put some emphasis on it, because I think a lot of times when something's going on, whether it's cancer or veterans or whatever, you know, sex gets downplayed as if it's some fluffy icing on the cake as opposed to like a core fundamental.
Well, and one of the things that I'll talk about in the podcast that you're touching on already is when veterans are wounded and they're going through recovery, so much of rehabilitation is focused on sort of, can you function and do basic needs? And this one is neglected. And so veteran families and couples feel alone, like sexuality isn't part of the recovery process.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. Like, it's such a battle to get sex like up front and center in these conversations, it seems like.
Absolutely.
in some ways, the sexual concerns are going to mirror the rest of the population, mm-hmm. right? Because like, we all have, you know, in some ways yes. we're all human, right? But what are the kind of concerns that are prevalent among veterans? Which ones seem maybe not unique to veterans, but like especially important?
Yeah, well, I think the one that we've got to start with, the one that most people hear about with veterans is PTSD. And I think sort of as an adjunct to PTSD, I will add MST. There's something to be said to the fact that MST, which stands for military sexual trauma, has its own term in the veteran population because of how prevalent it is and how painfully prevalent it is, not only in women, but also in men. And oftentimes, men are the ones that feel like they're the only ones that have been through this, and other people don't know the experience. And so I think sort of paired with PTSD is PTSD due to MST or military sexual trauma. And if we kind of look at symptoms of PTSD, you know, so intrusion, avoidance, altered thoughts or mood, and reactivity around arousal or just emotional reactivity, all of these play into sexual challenges. And sometimes it plays, you know, if we look at everything on a continuum, sometimes it's us backing away from a sexual experience or perhaps becoming overly hyper, you know, if we can use the term hypersexual, overly sexual as a way to repair or kind of make up for the trauma that occurred. And so, you know, with both military sexual trauma and with PTSD, we know that anxiety is part of the condition. Mm-hmm. And what do we know about anxiety? We know that anxiety tends to impair sexual desire. It tends to damper desire. And so, you know, I think about one of the symptoms, like I said, is intrusion. So if you're having intrusive thoughts, then you're probably ambivalent around engaging in sexual behavior, ambivalent around pleasurable experiences. You know, I have had cases, I'm thinking of a case off the top of my head where there was so much witnessed sexual abuse for a veteran in combat that certain objects, certain smells would sort of be right in this individual's mind and right at the forefront and center that it really distracted from being able to be present in a sexual experience.
When you say witnessed, do you mean, I guess I'm wondering what you mean by that.
Sure. So for this specific individual, they were a combat veteran. And so they are witnessing abuse between individuals on the U.S. side and then the opposing country and sort of sexual abuse that's happening between soldiers and sort of how, you know, with PTSD, it's not just undergoing an experience, it's also witnessing something traumatic that can create those kinds of symptoms.
So these sexual traumas are happening between, like, it's an act of war, basically, between soldiers on the different sides?
That is something that happens, yes.
I haven't heard that. Yes. I'm obviously ill-informed. Right? Yes. Wow. Okay.
Yes. So you can imagine things like that are going to disengage someone from sexual behavior. You know, there's a lot of sort of body numbness. This individual struggled with erectile dysfunction, you know, because just like other body parts have a quote unquote mind of their own, you know, the penis just kind of said, I'm checked out. I'm not going to do this. There's been too much violation, whether directly or indirectly, for me to function. You know, and so there's negative associations around sex and the body and pleasure. And then there's often sort of hypervigilance. So that creates difficulty relaxing. People are very uncomfortable or they're kind of engaged in a detached way. They're checked out and engaging in behavior. And then when you kind of help them ground or have them assess, you know, where were you? Where were you psychologically? They don't know, you know? So of course you're sort of out of it, if you will. And that's common, specifically with combat veterans, but also in the veteran population due to the extensive range of trauma in their lives.
Yeah. And I would imagine, I mean, I don't work with this population, you know, but I'm imagining that a lot of these symptoms or experiences would happen even below the threshold maybe of a PTSD diagnosis.
Yes.
But just having, right, like just having been through combat would be traumatic enough.
Yes.
Even if you weren't having flashbacks or whatever, you know, we might picture as PTSD, that it must be really prevalent to come back and be checked out or out of touch or vigilant or, you know.
Yes. I'm absolutely with you for sure. Yes. Yeah.
And what are some of the stats around these things, around PTSD, around sexual difficulties coming back, around, you know, military sexual trauma for both men and women?
So I can give you some statistics, and they come from a book that I'm not sure if I cited. I think I might have given you the name of the book, but I can come to it later. But I think the interesting thing with statistics is that statistics don't always show the full picture. And so right. A lot of things are underreported, you know, so a lot of, you know, they say 20 to 30% of OEF, OIF, which are Iraqi freedom and enduring freedom veterans, have returned with PTSD. They show significantly higher rates of sexual dysfunction with PTSD in comparison to combat veterans without the diagnosis of PTSD. You know, statistics say 4.9% of females and 1% of active duty males within a year experience military sexual trauma. But again, you know, these statistics are to be taken with a grain of salt.
Right, they're going to be sort of the minimum.
Yes,
right?
Yes, because there's so much underreporting. There's so much, you know, the military culture, sort of we're tough, we battle through it. And also a lot of our research is sort of very focused on, because men tend to be the ones in combat, and they tend to be the ones, you know, if someone is injured, and then part of a facility that conducts research, right? So you can see how the data is really skewed and you can't quite get accurate numbers. But I'm with you. I think there's a lot of underreporting.
Yeah. And then the military sexual trauma, I'm imagining that is sometimes at the hands of our own side, or plenty of times, right?
Absolutely.
And then I guess you're saying sometimes it's the hands of enemies.
Yes. Absolutely. Very often our own to our own, you know, sort of sergeants, people in higher rank, people sometimes same rank, sometimes when someone just comes in, you know, sometimes it's just boot camp, just in training, but it's really the numbers are abhorrent. They really are much higher than they should be. It's very, very sad.
And I don't know if you're in a position to have a thought about this, but is this something that the military is taking on?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. It is. So we have MSD coordinators at every facility, and there's a lot of coordination. Those within the VHA, Veteran Health Administration, there's an MSD coordinator. And then the VBA, which is the Veteran Benefits Administration, there are coordinators that help if someone was injured in the service and wants to, or has not yet been, get service-connected disability, then those individuals support filing and getting evidence together so that someone can say, yes, this happened to me. This, you know, let's review my military record to document, you know, that documents sort of what happened so that they can get support. I do believe that there's multiple campaigns. You Are Not Alone is one for MSD. There's national coordinators that sort of work very hard to outreach veterans to make sure that veterans know that there is support out there, that MSD does not discriminate based on gender. And you know, there was a highly publicized case recently in the news of a veteran that was killed with allegations of sexual trauma. That definitely raised voices, and it didn't have to get to that point for action to be taken, but action is being taken sort of to address this and really look at this seriously.
Yeah. So what kinds of things get in the way of veterans seeking help for sexual issues? I mean, maybe they're also minimizing, like, it's only sex, I've got to survive first. I don't know.
Yeah,
but
yeah, of course. Well, I think we're touching on the primary, which I think is military culture. You know, when people are going into combat, there's sort of a battle mind training. You know, you've got to be tough, you don't show weakness, and you have to disconnect from your emotions to survive. It's sort of the warrior ethos. Well, of course, the contradiction is what helps you in the service hurts you in civilian life. And so that, I think, is a really big deterrent from veterans seeking out services. And then, you know, just like for any general population, there's a stigma of talking about mental health issues, the taboo of help seeking, the taboo around talking about sex, right? We know this as a very common one. I think other issues, one of the things that's coming to mind right now is the former don't ask, don't tell policy, right?
Yeah,
and so you've got individuals who've experienced sexual harassment or just are struggling to allow their own sexual expression because they know that past policies and rulings may have been eliminated, but the after effects remain. And so sort of a wish to protect yourself by not seeking care. You know, just like you were surprised about some of the services that we do have available within the VA, I think a lot of veterans are too. And it's on us to sort of bring that awareness forward. But the lack of awareness that services exist is another reason that people don't seek out services.
Yeah. Okay. Hi, it's Jessa here, taking just a quick break. Thanks for listening so far. I wanted to let you know about the sex quiz that I've put together called How Healthy Is Your Sex Life? I've taken a close look at the typical ways that I see couples get into trouble with sex, including avoidance, neglect, negativity, distraction, and boredom. And the free quiz will score your individual results based on these factors. And then I provide my recommendations and ideas, including my top 10 sex tips, which will help you make instant improvement. If you'd like to take the quiz and see how healthy your sex life is, you can do it right now at sexhealthquiz.com. So if we've got the one category of sort of traumatic effects, right, PTSD, MST, right, that physically they come back whole, mm-hmm. but yes. Emotionally, there's psychologically, right, there's repercussions here. But then you were starting to talk about people that have been injured, wounded in combat.
Yes.
And that in rehab, they're not necessarily talking about sexual function and things yes. like that, right? Like yes. what are the kinds of things people are facing who've come back who are wounded?
Yeah, good question. And most people, I think, when we think of veteran, we just kind of assume someone is an active duty combat veteran. And that's not true. There's a lot of people that serve that don't witness, you know, friendly fire, hostile fire. But when you're someone who has served active duty, who has served either stateside or internationally, if you are injured in combat, likely you have a combination of physical injuries and psychological injuries. And this is going to affect someone's identity and self-concept. But the physical injuries that people come back with have an impact on sexuality and sexual expression. And so we can categorize these into different categories, but some of these, you know, so amputations would kind of fall into orthopedic injuries, injuries that affect the musculoskeletal system. So this is where you've got nerve damage or bone damage or muscle damage. And so when we think about that in reference to sexuality, that's going to affect someone's sensation, the ability to feel, and also positioning, you know, whether or not someone is able to stand a certain way, lie a certain way. Spinal cord injuries are similar, you know, when you've got nerve damage that interferes with functioning, you know, bladder or bowel functioning sort of being impaired. Something that people don't really think about consciously, but when you think about someone in uniform, when you think about someone sort of in active, you know, active combat, their gear protects their core. That right. protects their body, but it doesn't tend to protect extremities, which is why you can get sort of amputations, limbs, right? And so one of the things that doesn't tend to be protected are genital organs. And so genital injury is also something that can happen. And obviously, these are some of the most difficult to share with a partner. If your genitals are injured, your bowel movement, your bladder is affected, reproduction is affected, you know, testosterone production, hormones, things like that, all things that really influence all elements of the sexual response cycle.
Right, right.
Research talks about a really horrific dismounted complex blast injury, which is an explosion-induced amputation of at least one leg and other extremity, plus a pelvic, abdominal, or urogenital injury. So those are...
I'm sort of picturing that all in my head, you know?
Yes. Like, wow. Yes. And so those are, you know, sometimes these result in orchiectomies where you have to remove the testicles. I mean, it's really, these are really horrific.
Yeah. Devastating.
Horrific. Absolutely. And so, of course, when you've got a veteran who, you know, we keep that warrior mentality in mind, and now suddenly they're becoming kind of helpless and dependent on a partner to take care of them. If they have a partner, it really shifts the whole family dynamic, but also their self-concept and sort of the whole system.
And so I think what you were saying, though, is wounded warriors come back and the rehab is not focused on sexual expression and sexuality.
Yes.
And yet the VA is off, you know, has certified sex therapists on staff
yes.
in some places. So are there moves to include sexuality in that rehab, or what
yeah.
do people have to raise their hand and say, hey, I need some attention?
Well, I think it's probably right. You know, we're moving in the right direction. I think it's probably more the latter right now than the former, where someone really has to bring attention to this. One of the things when you asked, what are some of the things that prevent veterans from seeking services? The other thing that sort of comes to my mind is, what are reasons providers don't address these issues? right? And the reason they don't address them is because they're uncomfortable. They don't know how to bring it up. And again, it's on us to bring it up. But there we go again to, right? That answers your question, kind of. Providers are skittish to talk about it. Patient's not going to bring it up. Patient's going to follow the lead of the provider, right?
Yeah.
Because you're learning sort of follow command. And so that definitely plays a role too. But I do believe that physical therapists, occupational therapists, there are providers that sort of focus on sexual issues. And we're working to sort of recognize that, you know, and they, there's therapy offered, but we're also sort of working toward sexuality, you know, and the specific sex focus as being a really integral part of the treatment as well, if that's something that the veteran wishes to address.
Right, right. All right. So what are some of the tools or interventions that you use with veterans in either of these categories, wounded or post-traumatic?
So there's a lot of options actually that exist. And I think, you know, when we think about sort of sexual tools, we tend to think of vibrators, we tend to think of lubricants, right? But there's actually a lot out there. And some things are prescription and some things are not. So if we're talking about, you know, I kind of categorize lubricants and vibrators as sexual aids, things you can get over the counter. But then also when you talk to different specialists who sort of work on the physicality side of things, they also talk about different support. Like chairs or benches or wedges for a pillow, you know, that can help someone change position and orient themselves in a way that they can allow for perhaps insertion of whatever, right, to help them with their experience. And then there's also, you know, we have at our facility, we have a sexual health nurse who can prescribe. So penis pumps, penile implants, these are sort of sexual devices. Prescribers, primary care, and sexual health specialists can offer medication. So these are the PDE5 inhibitors, right, that people know, the Viagra, Cialis, things like that. And then there's also sex therapy. And so patients coming in are, I always like to say, you know, sex therapy isn't rocket science. We can really, therapists can really learn this stuff. It's just a matter of addressing, you know, why am I uncomfortable with this? Let me develop some comfortability. Let me work these words. Let me learn the tools and let me help someone. But as you know, sex therapy, we're talking about improving sexual communication. How do we lower someone's anxiety back to those PTSD symptoms? How do we, I remember with the individual I was mentioning, you know, I remember sharing something about talking to your penis, just talk to it. You know, maybe it's upset. Maybe it's upset about all the things it's been through. And wouldn't you not want to function either?
Yeah. What would you say to a spouse that maybe somebody's come home, there are issues now, sex has been difficult, they're not having sex, whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, I imagine most of these spouses or partners are looking to be supportive, but like, how can they introduce a conversation around, hey, let's talk about this and tackle this so we don't just let it, you know, give up on our sex life?
Sure. So I think one of the ways is to kind of find a way to start the conversation. And perhaps it's asking the veteran, what are some of your preferences? What are some of your priorities? And if they mention sexuality, then incorporating that in the conversation as a way to sort of lead, you know, to start it off. Because we don't want a partner to sort of come in and start with, I'm frustrated with da 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 da.
Right, right.
Right, in a way that kind of really, you know, muddies the water. But I also think perhaps suggesting couples therapy or couples, even couples workshops, you know, veterans, I know VAs have different workshops sometimes for veterans free of charge for couples, oftentimes through the chaplain for services in vet centers, you know, different workshops, different groups and things that kind of help enhance life skills, including sexuality skills. But I think, you know, the key is be patient, recognize that sexuality can change over time, experiences change over time, and maybe we need to expand the repertoire of sexual experience so that we can see what we can enjoy, what we, you know, even if it's not what we used to enjoy, even if it looks different, how can we both experience pleasure? Oftentimes, sex is so task focused. It's sort of, let's get to orgasm, let's get to whatever. Well, what if that's not possible anymore? Can we still sort of enjoy each other? Can we still have an appreciated sense of oneself with another?
Yeah. And I would imagine that military partners are pretty well aware of PTSD. And I mean, maybe they don't know exactly what's going on, but it does seem crucial to remember that there may be a lot going on inside that you're unaware of.
Absolutely.
In terms of what level of struggle, you know, because I just have these images, which maybe are not right, but people going along, seeming okay, putting on a good face, you know, not necessarily willing to share how troubled they are, you know, and then it shows up in the bedroom instead of realize, wait, maybe there's a lot more under the surface than...
For sure. I think there's so much shame. Yes. And just sort of to admit that, what does that mean if I'm admitting this? What does it say about me? You know, certainly issues of manhood, womanhood, you know, identity sort of concepts. Absolutely, Jessa, for
yeah.
sure.
And are there no's? I mean, you know, things spouses should avoid, like obviously, hey, I'm just frustrated. Why aren't we having sex? It's not that great, you know, but should a partner be asking about what happened? Should they be trying to be, you know, what else is like a good idea or a bad idea? And I get that it's different for different people, but.
Sure. I would say follow the lead of the spouse or partner or significant other, because I think we as humans are a lot more perceptive than we give ourselves credit. And more perceptive than we may think we are. And so follow the lead. It's what we do as therapists, you know, see where the conversation is going. If a partner asks sort of, do you want to talk about this? And you see that the impacted, if you will, I say that in air quotes, individual is skittish or sheepish to go there. Fine. That's okay. Maybe we can talk about intimacy. Maybe we can talk about emotional connection. Maybe we can talk about sensation. Maybe we can talk about non-sexual touch. How can we reconnect? You know, I think the key is, you know, sexuality is just one facet of connection. So if someone is feeling sexually disconnected, perhaps they're also feeling emotionally disconnected from their partner. So what can we do to bring you guys together in a way that feels facilitative and whole to the both of you?
And what would you say to a veteran who maybe is hesitant to share any of this with a partner? You know, either about their experiences that they've been through, their after effects, or their, you know, the effects on their sexuality. I sort of assume you would encourage them to share some of that, but how important is it to their healing to open up about some of this stuff?
Yeah. So I think it depends. I think if a veteran is able to open up to somebody, whomever that somebody is, I think that's a start. Whether that's a therapist, a friend, even if it's casual, you know, even if it's in a group, even if it's processing where they're sitting in a group and not saying anything, but there's a sense of universality and they can relate to other people having undergone it. So I think that's sort of where we start. And then I also think when I think about your question, I think when I'm talking to this to the veteran, I would say, ask yourself about the impact of this. Ask yourself the impact of not talking or not disclosing on yourself, on your partner, and on your relationship. Mm-hmm. You know, and that tends to sort of get the wheels turning of sort of, you know, well, I don't want to do this because I'm protecting myself, but perhaps I'm neglecting my partner by the fact that I'm avoiding a conversation. And perhaps I'm not prioritizing communication in my relationship if I feel like this needs to remain concealed forever and ever.
Yeah.
I tell patients, the sooner you seek help, the better. The longer it's with you, the longer you're carrying it, and it comes out in all kinds of other ways.
Right. Is there anything I have forgotten to ask you or that you want to make sure to address?
Yeah. So one of the things that, you know, Mitch Tepper is one of an ASEX certified sexuality counselor. And one of the things that he studied as part of his thesis dissertation was on the impact of injuries on veterans' sexual lives. And some of the things that we're talking about here sort of he proves in his dissertation. So he studied individuals and sort of the impact of what is someone's sense of themselves after injury.
Yeah.
And most people say they don't feel normal. And the sense of normalcy creates distracting thoughts. And they start to wonder, is it pointless to engage in sexual behavior? Why am I even doing this? And what he found is that trust, safety, and connectedness transcend physical and genital loss. Mm. So if someone is able to find a partner who they feel that they can give themselves up to on a psychological level, then the injuries that we talk about take a back seat because you can find a way to connect.
Yeah.
And so if people are able to find intimacy with a trusted partner, not only do they experience pleasure and orgasm, which we know are not just physical, but also psychological, but they can actually create peak sexual experiences.
That is a wonderful, hopeful message yes. to remember.
Yes, our body, for sure.
Our body function can change and we still have access to yes. sexual experiences.
Yes, so. We absolutely can be. We are sexual in more, right? We think the most sexual organ is the brain, right?
Right, right.
So we can definitely maintain sexual selves, even with physical injury, physical loss, genital injury, and sort of traumatic yeah. wounds.
Yeah. So where can people find you? And are there any other resources you want to mention for people? I mean, I'll certainly put things in the show notes.
Sure. I have recently, my position has recently changed. So I formerly was one of the mental health providers at the Jesse Brown VA, but I have since switched roles. So I'm now the Women Veterans Program Manager. And so my sort of focus has switched to female veterans. And there's a Women Veterans hotline that people can outreach to be able to follow up with me. If people are interested in psychotherapy services, they can sort of be assessed through the psychiatric assessment clinic and then be linked to a therapist. I've certainly offered trainings within the VA to therapists on addressing sexual issues. And so they can also be linked through their primary care provider to the sexual health nurse. And this is just our Chicago VA, but there's also other VAs and, you know, and vet centers and community-based clinics. These providers do exist. I will find certified sex therapists in the fold, and it's a wonderful thing. But I think there is a book that is called Sex and Intimacy for Wounded Veterans, A Guide for Embracing Change. This is something that is a very easy, short read that would be a helpful one for patients. Another one is Mitch Tepper's book, Regain That Feeling, Secrets to Sexual Self-Discovery. All books that are helpful sort of for patients, easy reads, and make people feel less alone. These things exist.
Yeah. Great. Thank you so much for coming on the show and taking the time.
Of course. And thank you to the listeners. And thank you, Jessa, for what you're doing and spreading knowledge. It's very much needed.
I hope it's helpful.
Yes. You have a good rest of your day.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Better Sex. Please visit our website, bettersexpodcast.com, for show notes and additional episodes.
And that's a wrap for today. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. If you are enjoying the podcast, if some of this material resonates with you and you would like to make a difference and make sure that this keeps coming out in the world once a week, ongoing, there are a couple things you could do to show your appreciation. The first would be to go to iTunes and rate and review the show. That really helps us be found by new listeners when you review the show on iTunes. You can find a link at bettersexpodcast.com/iTunes. The other thing I want to invite you to consider is becoming a Patreon. For a small monthly pledge, you get some benefits. So for $2 a month, you get advance access to every single episode. For $5 a month, you get a chapter of my upcoming new book. And for $10 a month, I host quarterly get-to-know-you and question-and-answer chats over the web, and you get invited to that. I would love to have your membership in that become part of the Better Sex family. You can find a link at bettersexpodcast.com/Patreon, which is P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Again, thanks for listening. I'm glad you're here. Feel free to comment, ask questions, get in touch. I'd love to hear from listeners. Thanks.